Hello, welcome to the second edition of the Log Chat podcast. This is Anton Chuvakin at SecurityWire Consulting.
And my name is Andrew Hay, and I'm a senior analyst at the 451 Group.
Okay, so as we promised last time, let's go through some interesting news from the world of SIEM and log management. By now, everybody knows that ArcSight was bought by HP for some number of billion dollars. Andrew, do you remember how many billions?
1.65, I believe.
And I guess on the opposite end of the spectrum, we had the acquisition of LogMatrix assets by Nitro Security. That
yes.
Hit the newsstands today, right?
Yep. It was primarily a technology acquisition, but there were personnel, intellectual property, and technology as part of the entire acquisition.
Yeah, that's also kind of interesting because it led some people to start writing articles about consolidation again. And I guess this is not our topic today, so we can just leave it at that. Another bit of news that I wanted to highlight is that Common Event Expression, or CEE, finally released its architecture. And also, in the next couple of days, the CEE project, which is developing a log standard, will also release its long-awaited taxonomy. That will be big news in the world of logging, that is for sure. Also, another bit of news that is probably has not been noticed by many people was that NIST folks have unveiled their EMAP project, which is going to be using some CEE ideas for creating more areas to standardize around logging and SIEM. For example, the materials from EMAP that I've seen mention even the standard language for correlation rules, which is definitely quite exciting.
And this is something we could probably talk about on another podcast, but I've always had reservations about standardized log formats and groups behind them, because you know you can develop formats until you're blue in the face, but until you get major adoption from a major vendor, it's all just academic.
Yeah, and that's actually where I think CEE by MITRE would differ, because a lot of people who would be actually developing the standards are the ones who would be building support for their products. For example, again, I would not mention any names at this point, but I believe that this effort can finally get adopted compared to all the other previous efforts, yeah. All attempts to standardize logs.
Ultimately, only time will tell, but...
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that's always the case with standards, right? Okay, so another bit of...
Remember when SDEE was the future of logging?
Oh, please. You really should not have mentioned this. But then again, if you mentioned IDMEF, I would be screaming. In any case, another bit of administrivia we wanted to cover is the name. During the first podcast, we mentioned that we came out under the name of LogChat, and we didn't really like the name that much. So we did a bit of a contest to solicit new names from our readers. So let me read some of the ideas, and I guess Andrew can, you know, make fun of them.
Well, that's what I'm here for.
Yes. So, how about a lot of people suggested Logcast, and I rather like it, but it's a bit of a mouthful, Logcast. I mean, it's this GC thing that doesn't quite do it.
Yeah, it's not easily transferable to non-native English language speakers, I would think.
There's that too. How about log forecast with a number in the middle? Numbers in the middle were kind of fashionable back in the 90s, right?
Yeah, well, it sounds a little bit too close to Forensic Forecast. And, you know, those guys do a good podcast, so we don't really want to trade on their name.
Yeah, I agree. So how about Login Zealots? Are we zealots? Are we just a bunch of zealots?
That just makes us sound insane, so we should probably not go with that.
Well, talk about insane. We always have the log dudes. Now, if that's not insane, I don't know what is.
That just sounds like we're smoking pot on a Santa Monica pier somewhere.
No, that's the log cabin.
Well, no, that has all sorts of different connotations.
Okay, which we can avoid because they are not really PG-13.
Yeah, join Andrew and Anton in their log cabin as they talk about logs.
Ask. How about the log coaster? You know, it makes me think of beer.
Yeah.
What about some esoteric names like UDP 514?
Well, you know, that's all well and good, but everyone uses TCP, right, for log transfer now?
Yeah, that too. Yeah, that's what I thought too. How about the log ride?
Same as log cabin. Pass.
Okay. Pass. What about the cool little names, dialogue and analog?
See, those aren't bad, but yeah. No, I think we'll pass.
They don't hit you in the face, like, boom, dialogue. I don't know. How about this? I rather like log-centric. I mean, I think a couple of people suggested log-centric, and I really like it. And given that the podcast will be focusing on logs, it is kind of log-centric. Still.
No, there's just something about it that doesn't pull you out of your seat, you know? It's just,
It's too scientific. Yeah, I
yeah.
agree. It's not.
We're struggling as it is to make to make other people care about logs like we do, so we need something that pulls their socks up and blows their hair back.
Thinking about pulling the socks down, how about log review?
So that's a little.
That's a review with a VUE, of course, not like, PCI log review.
Well, on the other hand, no one does PCI log review, so.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me. Yeah, I needed that. How about log radio? That's like so 90s, but it's like, 1890s.
Lock radio.
I mean, I rather like some of the names. And you know what? I don't want to make fun of my readers because you know what? These are the most valuable part of the podcast. But I rather like log chat, actually.
And
And you can make fun of me for that.
didn't Marissa Fagan say that that's what we should keep? I
Actually, that's correct.
think she was the
Yes.
first commenter on the blog post
I
saying,
am
"I like
looking
log
at.
chat."
Yes, you're absolutely right. I'm looking at the comments, and she says, I actually like log chat. So you know what? How about this? We're going to keep log chat and we're going to award our prize to Marissa.
Yep, I think that's fair.
That's fair. Okay, perfect. So that taken care of. Let's go to the main item on the agenda today. Last time we spoke about integration and what vendors mean when they integrate log sources, and I wanted to bring up equally boring subject today, log collection. Now, back in the early days of SIEM, people argued a lot about agents versus agentless and how to convert Windows to syslog in the least disgusting way and all sorts of other useful things about collection. But at the same time, this discussion kind of died down and people often just use whatever collection mechanism that's the best. Is this really a solved problem?
I would say no. It's making the best out of what you have, I think. We should probably preface this by saying, there's someone at Microsoft who shall remain nameless who takes a lot of the brunt for the inadequacies of Microsoft logging and Windows event logs in particular. And his standard response, he finally just threw his hands up and said, "Look, I tell them every single release that we need to change the way that we do logging and include syslog and do this, that, and the other thing, and they just won't let me do it." And I really feel for him because he's someone that's very passionate about logs, understands logs quite a bit, but he's just trying to push water uphill and it's not working out. It's Windows logs have gotten better over the years, but they're still not. You're still not sending native syslog, and really that should be one of those baselines for being able to log. You should be able to fall back on something as simple as syslog, something that's been around for I don't even know how long has it been around, Anton, do you remember?
Supposedly it's
You've got
predates
the RFC
80s.
memorized, right?
Yeah, I supposedly it's predates 1980s, but I'm not sure exactly the date. In fact, it's kind of embarrassing. I really should know this. But at the same time, if you're talking about syslog as a transport mechanism to move logs from place to place over TCP or UDP port 514, I hope you're not talking about the whole lack of format in syslog because I really don't want Windows to be as freeform as syslog. So it's kind of a mixed blessing. And you know what? As you know, Windows Vista and 2008 login, which is heavily XML based, is kind of a big improvement over the classic Windows 2000 style login.
Oh, and it definitely is because it allows a lot of vendors have been able to actually work with the data and not make assumptions like they were in the past. The XML format is very well documented. There are reference materials all over the Microsoft site, and it is, generations more advanced than standard Windows 2000 syslog, which was just a pain because, as you know, getting those logs off the system were challenging in their own right.
To put it mildly, yes. Yeah, yeah. WMI was really, I mean, I know some Microsoft people who cringe when they hear about massive collection of Windows logs over WMI, because WMI wasn't really meant for that originally. As you remember, as you know, I stands for instrumentation, and it really wasn't meant to be a log collection method.
No, it was more for troubleshooting and debugging of issues and the pulling down of system information, it's not an API or an interface into the logs.
Yep, yep. And in light of this, back in the good old days when everybody would run WMI, SIM products that were based on Linux or BSD or anything but Windows would have some major trouble even building WMI support, because a lot of library code was for Windows only. So I remember seeing a tool that implemented WMI in Java, and it was just not something you want to wish upon your friend.
Well, the other thing, too, is that because, you know, most SIM log management platforms are Linux-based, all these vendors were reliant on agents with the sole purpose of being able to act as a transit point for the collection and forwarding of log data from Windows machines. And, you know, it's very difficult to convince an organization to install yet another agent on top of their anti-malware and, you know, who knows what else agent-based on that platform if they're not unified under one particular vendor. You know, they could have four or five different agents running in the taskbar, and then you're asking them to install another agent on a critical server. That's a very difficult fight to try and make.
Yep. But that's the fight that was going on at many organizations, and it's probably still ongoing, about whether you want to give some product your Windows domain credentials, or you're going to install Snare, because that was by far the most popular agent to convert Windows to syslog. So I've seen some pretty painful conversations between the vendor SEs and customers about, would you rather deploy Snare from a third party, or would you rather give our tool your Windows admin password? And often the answer was, what? Neither.
Yeah. In all fairness for that model, you know, you can create a domain user that, and lock it down quite a bit with group policy, so that it's not just like a master domain administrator type account. It does take a lot of work, but, you know, as soon as you say that you need domain credentials, that's when everyone starts to freak out and says, oh, well, they're going to have access to everything, and we don't want to do that. We don't want to put these credentials in an application or assign them to a service, and, you know, it's another battle that you have to fight.
Yep, and by the way, you're absolutely right. That's probably how most of those deployments were eventually done, is by having a dedicated domain account that would have heavily restricted rights. Among them, there would be a right to collect logs and also to get some of the DLLs, by the way, to dereference IDs to fields, which was a whole other part of the Windows collection fun. Remember, maybe you had this experience as well, as somebody would say, well, is your Windows log collection forensically sound? Do you really collect originals? And people would say, hey, how are you going to answer the question? What is the Windows original log? Is it the EVT file? Is it the screenshot from an event viewer? Because if you convert to syslog, you can make an argument that it's not original anymore. And if you do conversion badly by missing some of the identifiers, keeping them as numbers and not as user strings, then you might be more original, but it's much less useful.
Yeah, and then you throw into the mix internationalization or localization of Windows platforms, which supports, I can't remember how many languages, which are all referenced in the DLLs. It's, if you're translating from Japanese kanji characters to English because that's what your log management product supports, then, well, that's not the original. That's an interpretation or a translation of the original log.
Yep, and that's not what the Japanese language operator would see on an actual Windows machine. So that's another interesting twist on Windows log collection in the sort of classic era of WMI and APIs and a couple of other mechanisms which weren't meant for that purpose.
Supporting double byte characters is an entirely different podcast.
Yeah, let's just leave the whole double byte characters aside for now, just because it's
that's a
I'm
fun
sure
nightmare.
All the vendor people who are listening to us now would cringe in pain, because that was that probably took a good number of engineering hours to make sure the system would work well in that environment. Yeah.
No, no one would be cringing as much as the engineers that actually had to implement it. So when I was managing a development team, and they were told that, or the word came down from the top that they had to support double byte characters, I had several people threaten to quit if I made them do it. And they weren't kidding. They did not want to do it.
Since we seem to be on this downward spiral of pain, how about IPv6 as a collection challenge?
You know, I don't see it. So today, I don't see IPv6 collection or interpretation of log data as big a problem as a lot of people do. A lot of vendors have gone out of their way, or you know, have put on the roadmap the support of IPv6 placeholders within log data, just because every RFP for the government, it's one of those requirements now. They want to know that they're buying a product that in 5 years, because in 5 years IPv6 is going to be everything, they're going to rip and replace IPv4, right? But they want to make sure that if they can, they want to make sure they can migrate to IPv6 if they have to, or if it's mandated. Mm-hmm. They're not going to buy a solution just because it supports IPv6 over one that doesn't, unless they're very close in feature and functionality. But it's one of those checkbox things. Do you support IPv6? Yes. Okay. Check. Moving on. I don't think, you know, other than in labs and in academia and in government agencies, I haven't heard of a lot of IPv6. I have yet to hear of an enterprise say, well, you know, we're going to switch everything over to IPv6 tomorrow because we've... You know,
yeah, right.
It's the future. We're going to do that.
We're going to do future today. Yep.
Yeah. I think it's still a little too far out. And it's another one of those things that kind of came from academia and is still fighting to get out of academia. And it's, you know, I don't see it happening in the near future. I'm holding out for IPv 6.1. The .o releases always suck, so we'll wait for that one.
That's
to,
right.
Well, it'll have all wait. The bug fixes.
Yeah, you mean like you're going to wait for IPv7. That's right.
Or IPv10, you know.
That will be way in the 30th century. In any case, while we're talking about collection, which is our main subject, another common... I want to open another Pandora's box here, namely estimating the volume of log collection. And that's a very real challenge that many organizations face today. People who deploy SIEM and log management tools, especially those tools that are licensed by EPS or events per second, have to know how many logs they would have from their environments. So they might plan for a very distributed collection from many, many log sources, but with low volume, or they would have to plan for a smaller number of log sources with a very high volume, firewalls, domain controllers, well, AD servers come to mind. So in many cases, before you even plan your collection infrastructure, you have to do the estimation, the dreaded task of estimating the volume of logs. So any tips from you, Andrew?
I just want to say that I love going somewhere and asking someone if they know what their event per second rate is on their network, and you get that blank 10,000-mile stare right through you because they have never thought about trying to estimate that, or they'll give you this ridiculous number that they believe could be accurate, but they're not 100% sure. Like they'll say, oh, you know, we have about 10 million events per second. And you're like, pardon? Oh, well, you know, we have a lot of events. Like I'm fairly certain that your 4,000 person company does not have 10 million events per second. And it's probably one of the biggest stumbling blocks that a lot of salespeople face when they're talking to prospects, because that's generally on everyone's punch list when they're doing cold calls. Like, oh, do you know what your event per second rate is? And they'll say, no, we've got a firewall. Well, if you've got like a Checkpoint firewall or a Cisco firewall at your perimeter for your enterprise and logging's turned up all the way on every single ACL and rule, well, I can tell you those are a lot of logs. The same thing can be said for web proxy logs. Those are generally the biggest generators of logs, some of which are useful. So you actually had a post, did you not, on estimating event per second rate not too long ago?
Oh, yes, yes. I did have the post on the blog. But at the same time, this is I can only give people guidance that they can apply themselves. I cannot really tell them, hey, here's a three-step procedure for telling the vendor that you are talking to about how much log data you have. It's really typically more complicated than that. Ideally, you want to wait for a couple of days or better for a couple of weeks and then size up how much log data got accumulated so that you'd have a more of a historical record and not really a measure of one individual second or a 10-minute period. So you end up having to do work to get to an answer, which I guess perhaps unsurprisingly a lot of people hate. But that's still the best way to know your rate, is to actually have your machines log at the rate that you're going to be logging in the future and just then size up the volume.
So the only problem with that is that most people will do that during the day. And depending on the type of business, you're probably going to want a much bigger cross-section of data than a 15-minute capture. T-speed dump for 15 minutes isn't going to give you an accurate representation of the type of information on the network. So back to web proxy logs. Not a lot of people can afford the bandwidth to stream the logs from their proxy. So they will send them to, you'll be logging to a flat file and then you'll FTP or SCP the file off and then force feed it back to your similar log management product, just because, if you can take a terabyte file and force feed it on a regular interval as opposed to streaming a terabyte of data across the network, well, you're saving a lot of bandwidth and it's probably not that time sensitive anyway. Mm-hmm. If you're force feeding it, well, that generally will count against your event per second and you'll see a massive spike in your event per second rate by doing that because it's like trying to drink from a fire hose and trying to count every molecule of water. It's not going to be that easy. You also have to account for busy times. If you're in retail, obviously big holidays or weeks leading up to holidays are going to be busier for your e-commerce sites if you host those locally. So your logs are going to be even busier during that time. Let's see, what's some of the other examples?
Even end of the quarter rush, where people do more internal application login, where more finance people, more people from different departments would hit a particular system at the end of the quarter. So you'd have a much higher spike if you're talking about internal application logs.
Yeah, definitely. The other thing that event per second rates tell you is they help you gauge how much disk space you're going to need for your retention. If you need to keep everything for 10 years because of some compliance mandate, your event per second rate is going to adversely affect the number of or the amount of storage space you need to keep that data for that 10-year period.
Yep, very much so.
And that being said, a lot of the vendors, or if not every vendor, has some sort of mathematical calculation magic, math magic that can help you figure out. You put in some inputs, I want to keep it for 10 years. This is my estimated event per second rate for a month. And it'll generally spit out, which appliances you need, how much disk space you need if it's like commodity hardware that you're using and it's a software solution. Your vendors can help you out with that. But there are really no hard and fast rules about my event per second rate is this, I need this much storage. There's too many fluctuating variables for that.
Yeah, and then usually it starts from you already knowing the number of EPS, and then you can compute storage and other things. But in most cases, the big challenge is to get to that initial number. So if you want to do a good job with that, I would suggest a collect logs for a week. Obviously, divide the volume by the time frame, and you're going to get your average EPS for that week. And it's not perfect. but I have not seen that many people who would be patient enough to collect for a month or for a quarter. And then again, a day is usually just not enough. So 1 week, in my view, is a very good baselining period for log sizing, log collection sizing.
I guess you could extrapolate based on a week, but then when you were talking about like end of month financials and ERP type stuff,
yeah,
well, that could be a bigger spike. So part of me thinks that maybe a 2 week period, including weekends, you have to include weekends.
Yes, very much so.
Maybe perhaps the last week of a month and the first week of a new month, maybe that 2 week period would help you extrapolate a little bit better.
Yep. No, I agree. I mean, if you're on the more patient and less condensed time frame, I would suggest 2 weeks or a month. Now, if you have to do something soon and if you have to have a good estimate, don't do a day. Still do a week, because in a week you'd know at least your weekend drops or Monday spikes, and then, yes, you would miss end of the month stuff. So I would say from 1 week to 1 month is a good sizing period to actually know your real EPS and not like a random blue sky guess EPS. And then essentially after you do that, you would figure out whether your challenges are with high volume collection or with highly distributed collection. I've seen many environments suffer when thinking about collecting logs. They suffer from one of the two diseases. One disease is high volume, when they have super overwhelming firewalls or proxies, where one device, one log source, might potentially overwhelm their SIEM system. And the other extreme challenge of log collection is when they have 40,000 antivirus clients and they have to collect logs from these. So the volume might be very low, but at the same time, the number of devices is super high. So log collection would be architected very differently in those cases, because you are fighting a different war. You are fighting a volume war versus you are fighting device count war.
Yeah, and that comes up all the time, especially when you throw in remote offices and like just disparate geographic locations where, you know, you really have to keep this kind of information in mind in the back of your head. Are you going to be able to, do you need to transfer huge amounts of log data, or is it going to be little trickles of logs from time to time?
Yep.
It's both are difficult challenges, and some vendors' products handle each better than the other. I'd say that the high volume or the high rate is probably one of the biggest problems that a lot of the vendors face, because you can only test so much in a controlled environment. Sure, you reach out to beta sites and just vendors that will help you size the product based on certain hardware. It's much easier for vendors that sell appliances, I would say, than those who sell software-only solutions.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because they can only size based on what the software can hold on the testing platforms they're using, whereas you could take their software and put it on an old Dell box and then say, oh, well, I'm not getting the event per second rate that I was told, and I'm dropping packets all over the place. And they're like, well, you're running on a P3 box with 256 megs of RAM. What did you expect to happen?
Right, and then they're going to hint that maybe a 64-core CPU, custom-made hardware would perform, you know, much better. How about that?
Yeah, this quad-core box would do this job perfectly.
Yep. And so high-volume collection actually might well justify a whole different discussion on scalability of collection and scalability of the products in general, because if we are talking about high terabytes, even the proxy volumes that go into double-digit gigabytes a day and potentially higher numbers, the problem just becomes different. A lot of things which are very simple in regards to collection, like copying syslog from A to B, become really hard if you talk about terabyte sizes. And it's really kind of interesting how size changes what we used to think of as a solved problem to a completely new engineering challenge.
And the challenge is still being addressed in the same way. It's throw hardware at it until it stops becoming a problem. That hasn't made any great innovative leaps and bounds over the last 10 years. It's, oh, add another collector, add more RAM, add more processing power,
yep.
add
yep.
more disk space. Problem
and with
solved.
more XML in logs, which is, again, a whole different discussion again, some of the CPU requirements and some of the RAM requirements go much higher compared to going through a simple name-value pairs or comma-separated values step stuff. So, you know what? Now that we are nearing the end of our planned time frame for this podcast...
Rant.
Yeah, fine. I wanted to say maybe you should stop ranting and give some quick suggestions to people in regards to log collection. So I would start, don't obsess about agents and agentless. Both have their place. Sometimes having agents on all systems and having those agents automatically batch logs once in a while is just much better compared to polling for all systems. While in other cases, polling or listening for logs streaming in is better. So agents and agentless is not a question of what's better. It's a question about what's a better fit. Second advice on collection is do make an effort to estimate how much log data you'd have from different log sources. I suggested a time frame of 1 week. Andrew suggested that 2 weeks would be much better, and I agree. If you can afford a month of sizing, that's really good, and only that would give you the real EPS as opposed to a random guess. Another suggestion is that if you have a large environment, you're going to face one of the challenges, either a very high volume collection or heavily distributed collection, or both. So when you're architecting your SIM or log management solution, think along those lines. Think about where the volume is, what log sources would produce the highest volume that would overwhelm your, might overwhelm your SIM or log management system. Or, and on the other hand, think about what are the remote places with low bandwidth links, possibly temporary links, and how are you going to collect data from those sources. And only then start thinking about buying boxes, how many boxes of what type. You really want to figure out how the log data would come from there to here.
And just as a brief follow-on, I completely agree with Anton on the agent versus agentless. Both have their place. There's no disputing that. For the EPS rate, if you can determine it ahead of time before you put out an RFP or before you pick up the phone and talk to a vendor, you're going to make your life exponentially easier. If you can say, I need to, this is my EPS, my estimated EPS over this time frame, and I need to keep the data for X number of years for this compliance mandate or, you know, for forensic and incident response requirements, then those salespeople can go away and come back probably much quicker than having to wait for you to get your EPS and figure out your the length of time that you need to keep the data. You'll get a very quick turnaround time.
Yep. Any more tips on log collection?
I can't really think of any off the top of my head, but then again, I am sick. So my voice is starting to go too.
We can always revisit the topic later because this is just a big area and it's also the very
It's never going to go away.
Yep. The very, it's not going to go away, yes. And WMI is not going away and UDP 514 is not going away. Nothing is going away in that area. Which is kind of sad. Some stuff really should go away. In any case, that was Anton Chuvakin and Andrew Hay with Log Chat Edition Number 2,